Good evening and welcome to the Oceano Community Services District Board of Directors meeting for February 13th, 2008. May I have a roll call, please, Patrick?
Certainly. President Hill?
Here.
Vice President Bookout?
Here.
Director Dahl?
Here.
Director Mann?
Here.
Director Dean?
Here.
Please join us in the flag salute. Ready? Salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Brings us to public comment. Any member of the public may address the board on any...
5% instead of 25 because of the snowpack in the mountains. So that's what I'm hearing from water resources, from my source in water resources.
The allocation out of the state. Water.
Our allocation will be increased to 35%.
Right. Well, that's good news.
That's good news. Yeah. I was hoping John Wallace would be here to confirm, but
Check.
It should be coming down. I also wanted to invite people to the forum on gangs, and I don't know if our Sheriff's Department knows about this. It's in Santa Maria, so it's outside of our county, but I think it makes sense that things don't change whether it's in our county or out of our county. We missed the one that was on February 12th, but the next one is February 19th, it's at Hancock College at the Marion Theater. It's called Why We Got In and How We Got Out. It's a panel discussion of former gang members discussing why and how young people become involved in gangs. And that's February 19th. These go from 7 to 9 p.m. on Tuesdays. The next one would be February 22nd, Telling Our Own Stories, The Drama Kings. Youth from Los Prietos Boys Camp will share their stories through dramatic interpretations and discuss lessons learned from their personal life experiences. And then on March 4th at the Student Center, the one I really want to go to is called Community Solutions. Panel discussion, local nonprofit agencies discuss their programs and help identify solutions and local resources. So I thought that might be a pertinent thing for any member or community member to go to, and I will give it to the people here in the office and they can post it.
Do they have times on?
Yes, they do. They have times and registration and who to call.
If I could just comment for a second, I've seen that program that the Los Prietos Boys Camp puts on. It is very powerful stuff. I'd really encourage people to go see it. It's very good.
Yeah, and these are the next three Tuesday nights.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Bill. I'm good.
Vern?
I have nothing.
Barbara?
I'll save mine till the end of the evening.
Okay. Just one very brief thing. I saw an article in the Tribune, Nick Wilson's column, that there's been a settlement of the finally
crossed how the I's get dotted, and that has all now finally been completed and the judgment has been filed, so that starts the time clock on any appeals or other things. It also kicks in the obligations for the northern cities to put in place the monitoring plans and a couple of other things that were part of the stipulation for judgment.
Mm-hmm. More progress at any rate.
Yeah.
Okay, I'd like to take a couple things out of order if we could. First of all, the Sheriff's Report. We have Commander Brian Haskell from the Sheriff's Department with us tonight. Welcome, Commander.
Good evening, thank you. Brian Haskell, Commander, Sheriff's Department South Station. To start off with, Board Member Dean, we are aware of those, and as a matter of fact, several members of our gang task force were in the audience last night during the first one, so they are monitoring those and providing assistance as they can. Because we are obviously very much tied into what goes on in Santa Maria with Napomo and Oceano especially, so we are paying close attention and we work very closely with Santa Maria Police Department as well. on those issues. So
that's
I just thought
excellent.
I'd
Thank
mention
you.
That. As far as activity in the Oceano area, we've had several things come up in the last month. We've had a report of increased activity. Once again, now that the weather's getting better down at the Oceano, what most people refer to as the duck pond, the park. I've asked our deputies to increase their patrol down there and do some foot patrol, try to minimize the problems that we're having down there. It's kind of a problem with the homeless population moving back and forth in and out of there. So we'll be working on that on an ongoing basis. We did have several gang-related stabbings occur in Oceano. The first one occurred on the 5th of February. Two individuals were attacked by what they said were six subjects dressed in black that they could not identify. Our gang task force is working on that presently, and hopefully we'll be coming up with some sort of suspect information on that. The second stabbing occurred the next day. A female victim was stabbed by another female, likely looking at some increased penalties for that. And if anybody has any information from the public on these stabbings or any gang activity going on in Oceano, I please invite them to call our department, and we can put some forces towards dealing with those issues. And also, I can pass the information directly onto the gang task force so that they can come down and deal with it. And they're down here 1 to 2 days a week working normally, so trying to do what we can to help them out as well. And that's all I've got. If anybody has any questions.
Questions or comments?
Just like to say I appreciate what we see you do in the community. Very visual. I've had the opportunity to observe several incidents recently, and I'm glad to have you in our community.
Well, thank you very much, and we appreciate being here and trying to do the best job that we can day in and day out.
That goes for all of us. We very much appreciate it.
Thank you.
Are there any comments from the public? Okay, thank you very much, Commander.
Thank you. Appreciate your time.
The second thing I'd like to take out of order is item number 7B. We have some guests tonight, Chief Mike Hubert, Chief Rick Heath, and Bob Peralt, City Manager of Grover Beach. Welcome. Glad you guys are joining us tonight. Item 7B is a fire item, consideration of the fire dispatch agreement. This is to consider approval of the general manager's recommendation to approve fire dispatch agreement with the city of Grover Beach. Patrick, would you like to tell us about it?
Sure, Mr. President, members of the board. Existing agreement for fire dispatch services between the district and the city of Grover Beach was signed in 1993. That agreement specified compensation of $500 per month plus a annual increase based on the CPI. As we all know, that basically was not applied. At its meeting on December the 14th, 2007, the board authorized the general manager to negotiate an agreement, a new agreement for fire dispatch services with the city of Grover Beach. The proposed agreement is attached as a result of those negotiations. I'd like to make one correction that Chief Heath just pointed out to me. If you look on the agreement itself, paragraph 5, the very last sentence in paragraph 5, it references the monthly payments from $518 to $1,518, and it provides for a review of costs no later than March the 1st of each year. The fire committee reviewed this proposed agreement and recommends approval.
Okay, thank you. First of all, comment or questions from the board?
I'm going to make one comment. I am going to support this. However, I really wish that I would have been more diligent and suggested that we pay the increased amount we should have been paying at this time, around $800 and change, and then perhaps go back and take care of what we had failed to pay in the past. I think we are paying more than what the contract called for, but I did support this agreement, but I just wish I would have thought about it a little bit more.
Thank you. Any other comment?
I'm in agreement with Director Mann on that. I'm a little disappointed in this rate, but the one question I do have is, and I want to make sure is accurate and true, is that this Section 3 that requires requires us to pay our fair share of the costs required to upgrade dispatch systems used by the city. This is this cost is equipment that would be used in our fire trucks only. It is not costs associated with the system as an overall system within the city of Grover Beach, that it needs to be upgraded for all fire dispatch or for their own, for their dispatching their own vehicles or their own or Oro Grande's vehicles.
It's my understanding that if Grover Beach upgrades its system in some way, it would pay for the upgrade. Anything that we needed to add, we would pay, whether it was hardware in our trucks, hardware somewhere else, software in our trucks, that sort of thing. We would not pay for upgrades to their system, only what we need to be in compliance with the upgrade.
With the system that they upgrade
right,
to.
Right. Is that fair?
Move forward with this. Just, I think this is really good. The first time this came to us, we had a meeting, and this increase got denied, and then we had a special meeting immediately after that, which cost the district a considerable amount of money just having that meeting. This is good for the community, and this is good for the safety of the community, and this improves our services in the future.
Comment or questions?
Well, I'm glad we're proceeding with this and it's finalized and we're ready to sign it. I know it's part of our whole consolidation of fire departments, and it is time we paid our fair share. So I'd like to get going and do that.
I guess my comment would be that I'm glad to see this come forward. I think it evidences the seriousness of the district in our efforts to improve cooperation and interoperability with our fellow jurisdictions, and I believe it's a provide benefit not only to our community members but to everyone in the area. So I'm also glad to see this come forward.
I'd like to make a motion to approve the agreement between the City of Grover Beach and the Oceano Community Service District for the provision of fire, rescue, emergency medical aid dispatching services. I realize there's a correction on page 6 and not 7 as Patrick mentioned. So changing that.
I'd second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we proceed with the staff recommendation. Is there any comment or questions from the public on this item?
Sir, if I could.
Bob?
Mr. President, members of the board, first of all, I would like to thank Patrick, your general manager, for his cooperation in this matter. Also would like to thank the board for coming forward with this increase. It comes a lot closer, I can tell you, to actually covering the share of costs that are borne for delivering services to your community. So I do appreciate that and the effort in which it's taken. Do you have any questions of me?
Any questions?
Increasing revenues, you know, general fund revenues, and I'm sure the same is true of Oceano. We're going to have to find ways to work closer together, and throughout this South County region between Oceano, Oro Grande, and the city of Grover Beach. And I'm sure that we would be more than willing to work with any partners that are willing to work equitably to fund and deliver services to our communities.
Yeah, one of the things that we have very in common together are our beach accesses. We have a beach access, Grover Beach has a beach access, and it's realized that we do need to have a third beach access, especially after the last storms that we had where the campers couldn't get off the beach. And maybe that would be something that we could maybe in the future hopefully
sure.
come together with and maybe work with the state and improve both of our communities.
I know it's not on the agenda, but relative to beach access, I want to tell you that relative to that, that we actually are completing the bid process for the Grand Avenue Bridge, and I would expect that that would be under construction probably later this spring, and that will improve access. We'll get back to the four lanes at least.
Very good.
For those of the, in the television audience that don't understand where that bridge is at, which one you're talking about, could you
That's the Meadow Creek Bridge, the Grand Avenue Bridge that crosses Meadow Creek. It has been, was originally four lanes. It's a basically an older bridge. You know, that's got the wooden railings. It has been deteriorating for some time. The two lanes were closed, I believe, well before my coming to town, so that's got to be better than a couple of years ago. And now we're getting ready to improve that access. So it should provide a good gateway to the state park once that's completed. Should be a relatively, once we get it underway, it should be a relatively quick project.
And that's just on Grand Avenue, just west of Highway 1.
Yes, that's correct. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bob. Okay, with that, may I have a roll call, please, Patrick?
Certainly. Vice President Bookout.
An approval of the minutes. 5A would be minutes of January 23rd, 2008. Are there any comments or questions from the board? Any comments or questions from the public on this item? Hearing none. Do you have a motion to approve?
I move that we approve the minutes of January 23rd, 2008.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve the minutes of January 23rd, 2008. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes unanimously. Item 6B, report of district department heads. Patrick?
Yeah, I'm out tonight, so I'll try to go through these as quickly as I can and still advise the public what's going on. The report of the administrative assistant for the month of January, aside from the normal task during the month, we prepared quarterly and annual investment reports. We prepared annual wage statements, W-2s, and miscellaneous income statements, 1099s. We participated in an SUI audit for the Employee Development Department, and administration also handled several background checks for prior fire department employees. We assisted with the completion of the annual waste discharge requirements report, which was submitted to the Regional Water Quality Control Board. And staff participated in a number of meetings with the Wallace Group regarding sewer system overflow programs, the FOG program, and a new training session on reporting formats for the sewer system overflows. The bills for the two-month period ending January 22nd were mailed on January 31st, and staff is now busy collecting payments on the new bills. Any questions on the admin?
Busy time of the year.
Yeah, yeah. The second report, utility operations supervisor. There were four sewer system failures reported during the month. Three of the calls were due to lateral blockages. The other call turned out to be soap suds from somebody's washing out a garage. The crew exposed and repaired the three lateral problems. In addition to that, we used a sewer cleaner to jet clean approximately 400 feet of sewer main on South 4th Street. We had two leaks reported in the water system during the month. Both leaks were customer plumbing systems. The district crew relocated a water service on Paso Robles Street. Repaired the district produced 60 acre feet of water, which was 4.5% less than December and 6% less than what was produced in January of 2007.
Okay.
And Fire Engineer Angelo is going to provide the fire department report.
Good evening. Okay. In the month of January, we had a total of 79 calls, 30 of which were in Oceano, 3 fire-related, 21 EMS calls, medicals and whatnot, and we had 6 others, which would be public service assists or any other general, which would fall under other. We have been doing our hose testing. It's an annual process that we have to do. So if you notice, the back parking lot on the modular side will be closed off periodically. We're just doing hose testing, and we don't want anyone over there because we have about 400 pounds of pressure in those at times. So if one of them pops, it can really hurt somebody. So every once in a while, we'll be closing that off for that. Engine 6165, or better, Patrol 6165, we have a crack in one of our rear wheels. We informed the general manager and the fire committee of that. We have another one being ordered 2 to 4 weeks before we can get it. It has to be custom built. And the finalized pricing we haven't gotten yet. Be in a further report as far as after we mount and balance and everything. Driver operator Colada just attended some classes down south for his fire officer cert and firefighter 2 and chief officer certs. He went down on the state's dime because he works for state of California up at Hearst Castle, and we allowed him to take our Tahoe down there and as a kind of a thank you, because he's going to use those skills here as well, and we'd work that out. So he was using our vehicle, but hotel, food, all that was on the state. So basically, wear and tear on the vehicle and fuel is what we paid. Other than that, just routine calls. Year-to-date, we're at 111 calls. Unfortunately, I could not get the computer to go back to the state last year. It's about all I can tell you.
Yeah, I understand that.
Due to the HIPAA laws. Yeah, it was a PG&E poll. They were notified at that time, and so far it hasn't been put back up, but it has. Someone's been out there and coiled it, I'm assuming PG&E.
But that wasn't one of our polls that we handled. No. For street lighting?
No.
Good. Yeah. I noticed it did, you know, our fire department, I got to give them congratulations. They responded to that within 2 minutes. I mean, it was very quick, and that's very impressive.
Yeah, we were actually out getting ready to leave, and someone pulled up in front of us and told us that there was a wreck down the street. And we were able to get down there and radioed in before dispatch even was getting the phone call.
Wow!
So it was pretty lucky that we got caught right there, because we may have been going the other direction. So it was pretty fortunate.
Okay, other comment or questions? Comment or questions from the public? Okay, hearing none. Thank you very much, and thanks to the staff in all departments for the hard work. That's been a busy time in admin. The utility department has got wells going, and a lot of effort there, and with the fire department we just heard. So thank you to all the staff. Moving on then to item number 7A, 2007 Volunteer Fire Assistance Grant. Consider approval of a grant for $5,978 with equivalent matching funds. Patrick?
Yeah, earlier in the year, a grant was approved from the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, a Volunteer Fire Assistance Grant. In the approval letter, it said they had to have a resolution by December the 1st, and due to an administrative error, we didn't provide that resolution. Just last week, I got a letter from them saying if we could get them a resolution fairly quickly, they go ahead and give us a grant. So the resolution is before the board for approval. We discussed this at the fire committee. The fire department does still need this equipment, so we're fire committee recommended approval.
Okay, comment or questions from the board?
I would have to say it was nice of Karen Mayer to send us another little letter reminding us. Yes, and I'm glad we're going ahead with this promptly now.
Vice President Bookout?
Yes.
President Hill?
Yes. Item number 8, utility items. 8A, cleaning and inspection of district sewer and water lines. This is our continuing disclosure of declaration of emergency following the San Simeon earthquake regarding damage to the district's sewer and water lines. I think the board is well familiar with this item. Is there any comment or questions from the public on this item?
I guess it's my turn to move that we continue the emergency cleaning and inspection of the district sewer and water lines.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we continue the declaration of emergency following the San Simeon earthquake. May I have a roll call, please, Patrick?
Certainly. Director Dean?
Yes.
Vice President Bookout?
Yes.
Director Mann?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
President Hill?
Yes. Item number 8B, consider a request from Cindy Dahl for reimbursement of alley paving expenses. Hello, Cindy.
Mrs. Dahl is present. Let me just briefly introduce it, and then you can. In a letter dated January the 21st, 2008, Mrs. Dahl, who's an Oceana resident, requests that the district refund $2,500 of her total cost of $3,350 to pave the alley behind her residence at 2480 Paso Robles Street. In October, Mrs. Dahl submitted a single application for a project that was really had two components, a remodel of an existing home and a creation of a secondary dwelling unit out of a garage. As that part of the requirement for that project was to pave the alley behind her house because of the secondary dwelling unit. As that project progressed, Ms. Dahl decided not to do the secondary dwelling unit, but to do the remodel. There was a miscommunication between staff and her, and she should not have been required to do the paving because it was no longer attendant to the secondary dwelling unit. So that's the reason she's requesting some relief from the district because of the money she expended on the paving that she really wasn't required to spend.
Okay. Do I have to do an official introduction?
Well, let me first ask if the board has any comment or questions on the staff report for clarification. Or
require alley paving conditions when we don't have ordinances or district standards for paving of the alleys?
We're allowed to require those things that are necessary for us to be able to provide our services. So it is not unusual as a condition of a will-serve letter or something like that for a requirement that some area be paved or that a alleyway be a certain width or something of that nature. That's not unusual. I don't know the particular background in this case, but it does happen.
But it usually wouldn't happen when it was just a remodel for a home.
Well, that I can't speak to. You might very well be right, but I think the proper answer to your question is that there has to be some nexus, some legal connection between the requirement that we impose and the services or the increase in services or the change in services that is dictated by the improvement that's being done.
Any other comment or questions on the staff report?
Do we have the fire letter or the fire plan questionnaire that Mrs. Dahl filled out?
She didn't fill out a fire questionnaire. The chief, Chief Steinhauser, and it's in your packet, wrote a one-paragraph, two or three-sentence decision on that, on the alley. I think think it may have been an exception. Did you have to file? Well,
I had to file something. It's been a lot of months, and I don't remember exactly. I have a big, thick file at home that I didn't bring really.
Yeah, she did. She filed a fire safety information
form. Yeah, I thought I filled out something. Yeah.
And he responded with that one paragraph.
I had to say how close the nearest fire hydrant was, right. Things like that, right. I believe.
And how far back was the house setting back, or the remodel setting back from the fire hydrant or from your property line?
Oh, you know? Well, the remodel that I did not change any kind of setbacks or anything. Yeah.
But you were close to the street, fairly close.
Apparently I was close enough.
Yeah.
I mean, you just take a few steps down and walk to the front door. I'm not sure how far it is. I don't know, 100 feet?
Well, yeah, the alley was attendant to the garage, secondary dwelling unit, mm-hmm. in back of the house, not the remodel of the house itself.
But there was the condition placed on both the remodel and the...
That was a mistake. There should not have been a condition placed on the remodel.
Yeah. Right.
So ultimately, we made a mistake.
That's correct.
Us as OCSD.
That's correct. Okay.
It was submitted as a single project.
Well, not, well,
I wanna,
not exactly
I want to just... At the moment, I just want to deal with questions related to the staff report, and then we can further discuss it. Sounds like the staff report is pretty well understood at this point. So.
To request a will serve letter for whatever sewer or whatever has to be served. Okay, well, how do I do that? Well, since you just give us a written request. Okay, so I always had two separate sets of plans. They were completely two separate deals, two separate requests to the county for permits, two wholly separate sets of building plans. And Arnie Dowdy was the general manager at the time. Okay, what do I do? Just request by letter. Okay, fine. So I wrote a letter, not knowing there's any need to do two separate letters because it's two separate deals. My understanding was it's one letter because it's all going to happen. If it all happens, it's all happening, you know, at 2480 Passarola Street, any way you divide it out. So I just did one letter based on my understanding that's what I was supposed to do or needed to do. So I submitted that, and I think you take the plans and you do some kind of investigation or something with them. I don't recall exactly what OCSD had to do with the plans, but I think I had to leave them for a while and they do something with them and approve them or something and then give them back to me and then issue me the will serve letter. But what I got, which was appropriate, was two will serve letters, each identifying its own separate county building permit number. So you gave me two letters, which I have them in the copy, the agenda packet that came online, and I think you have them. They each identify the two building permit numbers, and the one ending in 756 was the one where I was doing a remodel to the house. So when I collected, I got the will serve letters. I didn't think anything about it. I looked at them, and they looked identical to me, other than, you know, the permit numbers and identifying it at the top. So I proceeded, of course, to go get bids for all the work that was going to have to be done and look into a home equity loan and yada, yada. And I determined... Once I collected the bids, there's just not a chance that it's financially feasible for me, a single person, to try to turn the garage into a living unit. If I do that, you create affordable housing, it's going to be more affordable for someone else than it will be for me because I can't collect enough rent to make it break even. So forget that. So I told the county, you know, they approved the plans all the way through, and I told them, leave that one there, I'm not going to pick it up. I'm just not going to take the permit. So I never took the permit out on that one, and they said, fine, you just leave it and it expires, I think is what they told me. And so then I'm just working through the process of doing the remodel as it can get done. And I don't know, along the way, while Arnie Dowdy was still here, I knew that both of those letters, I never had any reason to think that this alley paving issue was an issue. I mean, it was in both letters. I figured they gave me the requirements, they're the requirements. So in the process of reading, it's got to be 20 feet wide and yada, yada. I went out there, of course, and I'm looking and I'm going, when the interim... he resigned, retired, whatever he did. Then Arnie Dowdy, right, was the next general manager, the interim general manager. So I was getting a lot closer to having to deal with the paving problem. So I'm going, okay, this is a problem. And I came in, and I had said to Mitch Cooney, just verbally, well, I'm not doing the garage, but I never said it in a way that indicated, so this condition shouldn't be in this letter. Like, I had no way to know that was not something I would know as just an average person. So, but I did mention it, but I didn't think it had any consequence. Like, why would you care if I'm doing the garage or not the garage? And then when Arnie Dowdy was there, I said, okay, we had this problem, and Can't be 20 feet wide. There's no way to humanly, physically make it drain to the nearest street. We need some kind of alternate plan if I pave the alley. And I had mentioned to him verbally, not in writing ever, I'm not going to build a garage. I didn't pull the other permit. But again, I don't think when I said it to either one of them, it obviously didn't connect for them mentally that, oh, that we put a condition that really doesn't tie to that, so we should remove the condition. So all we were ever talking about was, what's the alternative I can do to the paving of the alley, knowing the telephone poles in the way and knowing, you know, these issues exist. I can't make it drain to the nearest street and I can't move the telephone pole myself. So they worked with me and then he came into the picture and he was the lucky recipient of my problem. And I'm still saying to him, can't pave it 20 feet wide and I can't just come out and look. I can't do it. And they did. I don't remember if it was you. I think that was before you were here. I think it was Arnie Dowdy. Mm-hmm. And a utility person and a fire person, they told me they all came out and looked at it and said, you know, you're right. You really can't pave it 20 feet wide. And you can't make it drain to the nearest street. So ultimately, the paving happened 18 feet wide, and the whole thing drains onto my property. So for the entire width and length of the whole alley paving, property line to property line, it now drains onto my property. And I said, I'll live with that if I can just eliminate the 20 feet because I can't make it 20 feet. Because my biggest concern was, which I kept saying to all of them, I don't have the money to pave an alley. It took me 10 months to put that money together to pave the alley. I can't afford to rip it out and do it again. So somebody's got to guarantee me when I do it the first time, it's the only time. And so they agreed. And that was great. Everybody here has been great to work with. The staff's been totally helpful through the whole process and really understanding and patient. And so after I paved the alley, I paid the money, and I went to get the final on my permit with the county said, you didn't have to pave the alley. No, tell me that isn't true. That can't possibly be the way it is. I've had it down there, but my garbage service is on Passarola Street. I don't put my cans or anything out on the alley side. I think there's other people that do have their trash picked up from the alley, but I don't have mine picked up from the alley. And I don't know what qualifies somebody to have it picked up there. And my understanding would be fire service would be like on Passarola Street. And I think, I could be wrong, but I think what you would have been telling me is, had I turned the garage into a living unit, then fire service would have needed to come on the alley side. And trash service probably would have needed to come on the alley side for that. But that doesn't exist because, you know, I didn't do the project. So that was my bottom line. My one will serve letter request was only because I didn't know you have to do two if you have two sets of plans. I wasn't instructed to separate them. So that's pretty much it, unless you have questions.
Okay, are there questions for Ms. Dahl from the board?
Are you planning in the future maybe to convert the garage into a second unit?
Not me, no. No, I determined it's not financially feasible for me to do it. If I didn't have cash to do it with, if I have to go get a loan to do it, which is what I would have to do because I don't have cash to do it, it would not be feasible for me to do it.
If at that time, if in the future you do decide, at that point, paving the alley would come up and would have to be done with our requirements or the county's requirements?
Ours. It's so, a fire requirement.
So if we were to grant you the $2,500, if in the future you decide to convert your garage, you would then at that point...
It would be like a fee imposed back on
you. Would ultimately have to pay us back $2,500.
That would absolutely make sense.
Okay.
That would definitely make sense. I don't... And you might want to give that to me ultimately in writing because I don't intend... I really, for me, can't see a point in time I'm going to do that. At this stage, I don't see me selling the house anytime soon. I've been in the county 30 years. I've been in the South County 10 of those 30 years. I've been in this house, I don't know, around 6 years. I have no compelling desire to sell it anytime soon. I live here, work here, don't intend to go anywhere.
Do you have kids?
Not young kids, no. Yeah.
One day, one of them's going to want to move home.
I know.
It's awful expensive out there.
Yeah. Been there, done that, yeah. No, I understand that. But for me, I don't see that happening. But the set of plans that I had drawn, that I paid an architect a ton of money to draw for creating that as a living unit, I'm unit in the garage at this point. I would keep the plans for the purpose of passing them along to a new homeowner if they had them. if they wanted to do it, and, you know, because it's been approved for that, you know, the county, you know, passed muster with the county, and the county was good with the plans. So they'd have to resubmit them. But at that point, if a new homeowner did it, if I ever sell the house, you'd probably be imposing the fee on them. So maybe giving me something in writing where I would keep it in my file, and if I ever sold it, I'd pass it along to that person so they're kind of forewarned. Or I guess if they file with you for a will serve letter, it would just come up as a condition for them, probably, I guess.
Question for Alex.
The without impugning anybody's integrity, because that's not the intention here, it's completely unreliable to depend on the homeowner to self-regulate that, because the property can change hands 3 or 4 times.
Totally true.
Right. So normally there would be a cross-indexing system, usually based on the street address or assessor's parcel number, and the records would be, you know, a copy of a letter or perhaps a formal agreement signed by the current property owner would be retained in the district files, and then it would be a condition of some future will serve letter for the additional unit.
We would have to file something against the title, would we not?
Well,
that's a recorded document. That's
certainly the best practice, but I wouldn't say that it is routinely done because it does kind of muck up the homeowner's title. If in fact the triggering event would be the obtaining of the rights to an additional dwelling unit on the property, which I believe was a triggering event, and would have been the triggering event in this case, then they're going to have to come to you one way or another to get a will serve letter for that additional unit or some other kind of permit. So you have something there.
The practical matter is that we file things by owner's name. So right now we have a file for Cindy Dahl. And so if she sells it to John Doe and John Doe comes and applies for a secondary dwelling unit, we send the fire chief out there. He says, hey, it's got an alley. It's got a paved driveway. It's no problem.
You know, I personally have no problem having a document recorded with the county.
We can certainly do that. It's going to be a couple of pages. And
I mean, that's the only way.
I don't want to hire an attorney to prepare it. So if you're willing to prepare it, I'm perfectly willing to ensure that it gets recorded and sent back.
That this money is coming from to pay back to you. I think that that would make it, you know, something that I could support rather easily. And I would support that.
Well, I appreciate it. Everybody's been, all the staff here has been, really great to work with through this whole remodel process and, you know, every part of it, even when I kept coming in moaning about, but I can't make it 20 feet wide and I can't make it, what do we do? And everybody's just tried to really get it figured out as best as possible, and So I totally appreciate the consideration.
Yeah, the problem I think we'd have without recording it is that if somebody did come by your house afterwards and then they came at a later date after it was bought to do some improvements and found that they had this additional fee to pay that nobody else had to pay. I think that if I was the person buying that house, I wouldn't be too happy.
Oh, I absolutely agree. Yeah.
I see that Ms. Dahl works for the Pismo Coast Board of Realtors, so she knows how this works.
I do. That I do. And I already voluntarily, I'd hired an attorney before when the neighbors on the corner of 25th and Paso Robles Street, when they you had to approve their deal to build a brand new two-story house on a vacant lot there. And the county, I don't know if you made them do the drainage. I think it's the county made them put this drainage inlet right at the back corner of the property. And he wanted it located. I'm not sure the county cared where it was located back there. It was supposed to be sort of on his property. But he asked if it could be at the corner of my property. So the agreement was, yeah, if some of my water can drain into it, then yes. And we can do pretty much an easement. We can get an easement drawn up and get it recorded, and then it's good for everyone hereafter, whoever owns the property. And they agreed, so we did. We drew an easement up, and that's on my title and on their title as well to share that drainage hole. So, you know, I'm not bothered at the concept Did it get recorded on there? Because it's not going to be an expense to anybody. I mean, presumably it would read clearly that it's not an expense unless they come in to request a will serve letter to convert that garage. So, you know, as long as that's clear to somebody.
It would be that or any other thing that would happen on the property that would trigger the requirement.
Trigger the alley requirement.
Yeah,
I think that's totally reasonable. It doesn't bother me for it to be on my title.
Okay. Yep. No, that buyer knows that it exists, that the issue exists. When he walks in with a project and his name is Smith and they look under Smith and don't find anything, there still is a potential, you know, internal problem, which might speak to Patrick doesn't need any additional projects, but giving some thought to reorganizing the way things are filed.
You know, I might comment here. You can see we've had three general managers, and everyone's been involved. There's obviously a few technical mistakes here, but we are with that. You know, mistakes are made. And we will run into these type of situations most likely in the future. And with you bringing this to our attention in this way, it just shows that, you know, we have made a few mistakes, and, you know, this is something that we can correct.
I just totally understand that. I've made plenty of my own mistakes.
And that's what bothers me, because I've seen in my own situation arbitrary standards placed on my development, and the same thing on yours, which shouldn't have been placed there. So I'm wondering who's going to be placing these standards on people now. We really don't have a fire chief that would handle that. And it's a lot of building development stuff. And one of the things I found in our own resolutions, we do have an all-weather standard, and it's a gravel road. And it's in our resolution 1997-22. I would think paving those alleys with gravel would be probably our better bet to do, because they are permeable. The water flows through instead of going off onto either side and making a big mess. And I think we should consider paving alleys with gravel. A based gravel road rather than paving them, because what we're doing here when we put in paving, we put all the water off onto the neighbors, and it becomes like a drainage swale right through the road, and it makes a big mess. I don't think we're helping our drainage and flood situation by paving the alleys. So I think we should bring this back to the board to consider what we're doing here with requirements on roads.
That's another item.
A little bit off topic. I'm going to be one project, I guess. They probably, it's this first will serve letter states that it's a revised will serve letter, which indicates to me that they probably had at least a draft will serve letter before that, encompassing both projects. And probably what happened is that someone, without thinking, when it came back from the county with two projects, they probably effectively Xeroxed the will serve letter, and it erroneously stated that for the remodel that you did, that paving the alley was required. That was obviously an error. It was an error on the part of the district, and it was a requirement that should not have been imposed. However, there, on the other permit from the county, it would have been reasonable to impose the alley paving for fire safety, and that was the legitimate reason that was originally discussed, and when the fire chief at the time was under the impression that there was going to be one project, as near as I can tell. So I think that was the origin of the error, and I'm not sure that once it went forward, then there was probably some lack of communication, but I'm not convinced in thinking about it that even if Ms. Dahl had come to the district and said, I'm going to cancel this project for the garage addition, and we would have got out the file and stamped it void and whatever we do and said, okay, that one's a done deal. We won't think about it anymore. I'm still not convinced that that would have triggered anybody to notify you that, oh, by the way, you don't have to pave the alley due to the project that you're actually going forward and working on. And I struggled with this for a while, trying to completely understand what was going on and also to come up with what I thought was a reasonable solution to it. One thing that I thought might be a reasonable solution would be some kind of a fee waiver for going forward with the second project. It's something we, you know, might want to consider. Something along the lines that
she's asking for money back for the alley that she paved.
Well, okay. Right. It's a technical issue, but she paid for the alley, and she wants us to reimburse her for paying the alley. She never gave us any money. Yeah. Maybe I'm misunderstanding, but okay.
If we refund that money, or if we give her back the money she paid for the alley in error, then I want to be sure that Alex's document is ironclad, or as much as it can be, because I'm sure none of us will be around when it comes back to change that property.
Yeah, I'm not worried about being able to put something in the public record that's enforceable. That shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, then that may be so.
The point I think that Patrick brings up, if I'm not mistaken, is that there were no fees paid to the district, first of all, on the remodel project,
right.
And then there was also no fees paid to the district because the other project didn't go forward.
Correct.
However, she did expend this money in the reasonable reliance on what the district told her, which turned out to be incorrect. So.
Yes, so if we expend money, we can't refund connection fees. We can't pay it out of connection fees. We have to pay it out of water sewer operation expense or general fund operating or admin operating expense.
Well, again, if we vote to do this, then I think, you know, it should be two separate things. If we're going to give her this money, that's one issue, and then it's up to us or the general manager to figure out where we're going to get that money.
Right.
It shouldn't be connected to giving her money back, I wouldn't think. You know, it's not her problem where we get the money.
Right, okay.
To pay for.
No, I just want the board to understand. We never got anything, so
you know,
this is an expense.
To pay for a mistake.
I understand that.
Right.
That was caused by two people, you know, us and Ms. Dahl.
Right.
You know, it was
right.
Both in a lack of communication.
I'd like to see her money refunded and put into Alex's agreement. And I'm hoping in the future we look a little more carefully at these requirements that we place on people. A lot of these things that are in here, I mean, it's just boilerplate, or we'll throw every request under a agreement that Alex will provide, and we will record that. That's my whole motion. That's it.
I will second that.
Okay, the motion has been made and seconded. From my own edification, I didn't hear. Was there a dollar amount established in that motion?
It was the amount that Ms. Dahl requested, and I'll have to look to see what that was.
It's $2,500.
$2,500.
$2,500.
Can that come out of administration, because it was administration expense or administration error?
It does.
Well, again, I think that that's being taken as a separate issue.
Okay, that'll be fine.
So there's been a motion and a second before us to have the district reimburse the $2,500, if I'm understanding this correctly, with a notation to be made on the deed to carry forward such that if a project necessitating paving was ever made on that property, that the district would be reimbursed for the funds. Is that?
That's correct.
That's correct. Okay, given that we have a motion and a second, first of all, is there any further board discussion? Any comment or questions from the public on this item? Okay, Patrick, may I have a roll call vote, please?
Sure, Director Dean?
Yes.
Director Mann?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Vice President Bookout?
Yes.
President Hill?
Yes. I think the second thing that we need to do then is to take up the second portion of the staff report, which is to consider what fund reimbursement should be made.
And make a motion that that comes out of the administration fund, being that it was an administration error.
I second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we take the money from the administration fund. Comment or questions from the board? Comment or questions from the public on this item? Can we have a roll call, please, Patrick?
Sure. Director Dahl?
Yes.
Director Dean?
Yes.
Director Mann?
Yes.
Vice President Bookout?
Yes.
President Hill? Just so you'll know, we'll have to make the check conditioned upon getting it filed. So it'll be a little while, but it won't.
If somebody gets mailed to me, though, right. Don't get mailed street address, have a P.O.
Oh, I saw that. Okay.
Thank you.
Could we have a break?
Yes, let's take a break right now for 10 minutes. You guys ready? Okay, we are back with the continuing on our agenda. We have utility items number 8. This is item number 8C, Dean request for refund. Consideration of a request from Pamela Dean for refund of connection fees.
And I'll recuse myself and go sit in the front.
I didn't hear what Pamela said.
She recused herself.
Recused herself and would sit in the audience. Okay. Having done that, Patrick, would you like to tell us about this?
Yeah. In a letter dated December the 14th, Pamela Dean, Oceana resident, questioned why she was not offered the option of installing all connections and meters for her proposed building projects at 1939 Wilmore Avenue, during the process of parcel map with the county. You have a copy of that letter. I'd like to pass out a document that shows the amount that we're talking about. I didn't include that in the staff report. Basically, it's about $10,000 is the amount of a refund that's being requested for the three units that can be built. The first unit, and Ms. Dean is asking for, I'm going to say Ms. Dean since you're not on the board right now, is asking for a refund for two of the units because the first unit she received the fees that were in place at the time, and she would have liked to have paid for the other two units, so we're only talking about the additional two. The difference in fees that were that she paid large developers or individual developers to pay connection fees before constructions to begin or before a permit is pulled on a project. And the reason for that is that the Oceana residents decided in 1993 to purchase water from the State Water Project, a lot more water than we need, and the intent was to protect water rights or to be able to provide water to future development. And the belief is that the people who benefit from that extra water are the people who develop in the future, and so they should be the ones that actually pay the cost of having that water available, not the current residents. In order to do that, the only way we can recover those costs, because we have to pay them, current residents have to pay them every year. They have to pay for this water whether we use it or not for the availability. The only reason, the way for current residents to recover that cost is through connection fees when a new development comes online. And the board has decided in the past to increase those connection fees by the amount that residents pay each year to preserve that water through the State Water Project. So every year those connection fees go up. If you allow a developer to pay connection fees today and they don't build for 10 years, that means that there's 10 years worth of increases that they won't pay. So the bottom line is they're not paying their fair share. So staff would recommend that it not be district policy to allow any developer to pay their connection fees until they pull a permit and start building. Now, there have been two instances where that I'm aware of. There may be more. There are two instances that I'm aware of where developers were allowed to pay connection fees in advance. One was with the current TAC in development, 48 condos, and that developer agreed to provide a well site for the district on the property that he was developing. And it's my understanding, although we don't have any firm documentation to support this, it was my understanding that there's a negotiated agreement between the general manager at the time, Mitch Cooney, and the developer that they would provide the well site, and in return he would allow them to pay their connection fees early. The second instance I'm aware of was a Mr. Wampler who wanted to, a year later there was a fee letter issued which was at a different amount than what he had paid originally. And then after the 4-year period of time he came back and asked for a refund since he couldn't proceed with the project and the money was refunded to him exactly what he paid. Those are the only two instances I'm aware of where developers were allowed to pay in advance.
I think on the Wampler deal, if I remember correctly, and I'm sure that in the next few days you could check it out, that at the time he paid that in 2003, that was the time when you went to the county with your application, and they gave you a number, and you came down here, and you paid then the will serve letter. His project was never completed because he would not put up the money for the sidewalks, curbs, and gutters. He got his money back because finally it went to court, I believe, and the county gave him 90 days to do what he was supposed to. And they at that time, they were willing, the county was willing to let him do that at the old rate that he would have paid if he would have done it when he applied. He did not do that. After time went by, then he was given his money back. But I'm sure if you check into it a little further, you can find how the process was. The process changed after that. Right. I don't know what date or what year, but when instead of going up there first and giving you the number, you're coming down and get the will serve letter, the process changed.
Okay.
But I'm sure you can find that out.
On the Tacken property that you mentioned, were they granted, did we get a deeded grant for a particular property of theirs, a well site?
Do we have a
recorded deeded grant in our files for a well site there?
I don't know.
Because this would have had a legal opinion at the time, I'm sure.
Well, I've been told that we accepted that property, but I haven't been able to confirm that.
Yeah. You brought something to our attention today regarding some files in a packet here, request for records. Mm-hmm. And in it, it says, most of the negotiations concerning the well site were conducted by GM Cooney, and none of his files are still here. I'm
notes. My intent was to let you know that we don't have any notes.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not like, I mean, maybe there weren't notes. I don't know that.
Mm-hmm. This isn't that long ago, and I kind of remember some stuff about the TAC, and you know, since I've been a director, which would be probably in our minutes, and I had a question for Alex. Alex, do you remember giving a deed or us negotiating a deed with TACN for a well site on their property? Because this was something that came
before
our board.
I don't recall. What time frame are we talking about?
Mr. Davis's notes here are January 24th, 2005. So this is something that we talked about, the TACN property. And I think we talked about in length.
Is this the old avocado project?
Yes.
I certainly don't remember it under the name Old Avocado, because I didn't hear that until the issue arose regarding the encroachment permit for the sewer line. I do recall some discussions about the TACN property, but I don't recall anything about a well.
If I'm not mistaken, that we did have an issue on an agenda approximately that time where the district board did determine to accept, and I don't know if it was a deed or an easement for the well. It says on the plan, it says proposed OCSD well site easement, and I'm not sure whether, again, it's an easement, which is, I guess in all practicality, probably as good as a deed, or in terms of being able to use that to operate a well.
This might very well be something that we need to pursue, but is it on point to the item for discussion, the dean request for refund?
I think it's probably not. If there's a relation then we need to pursue it. If there's not a relation to it, then we don't need to pursue it.
I think the only relation is that there was apparently some in a perhaps parallel instance, there was value given for consideration of perhaps maybe making payments mm-hmm. at a different time. A supply of water for the term that I've heard is build out that would allow development to be sustained with adequate water supplies. And I believe you're correct that all of the current residents are paying that fee going forward, and the way for that to be equitably dealt with is to have that rate go up annually, which we've already done. Okay, I guess at this point, Ms. Dean, if you'd like to make a statement.
Yes, I'd like to pass this out for the record. Mr. President and members of the board, to set the record straight, I am not asking for a refund as stated on the agenda item. I am asking to pay my remaining water service connection fees per my fee letters, and I'm asking this for this because I was prepared to pay for these fees in March 2005 per my OCSD ordinance and per my fee letters at that time, but was prohibited from doing this because of a purported policy which required a building permit prior to water service connections being paid. What do established OCSD ordinances say? They are there in your packet. In Section 2-20, titled Subdivisions in OCSD Rules and Regulations, it states, prior to the granting of approval by the district for a recording of a final map or of installing any part of a public service under the jurisdiction of the district, the applicant shall pay either pay all fees and meet all district's requirements or pay all fees and post bonds guaranteeing the construction of all improvements and meeting all district requirements. Ordinance 2006-1, that even going to allow the water and sewer stub outs from their respective mains to the back of my sidewalk without first having a building permit for every lot. I had to write a letter, which is there, explaining that if I put these service connections in one at a time, I would end up ripping up my new road, curb, gutter, and sidewalk each time a service was installed. OCSD finally granted me the exception, and a deal was worked out where all the service connections would be installed with the payment of water service connection fees delayed until I got building permits for individual lots. This is contrary to what staff report is asserting, that when it says it is district policy to install service lines without requiring connection fees. The building permit requirement, the staff report asserts that there are two reasons why this practice is justified. Justification one, unless the size of the service connection is obtained from a building permit, errors result. The staff report contradicts itself on this point. If it is district policy to install service connections prior to a final map, and you can't get a building permit without a final map, how are you going to size the service connections? Also, specifying the size of the service connection is actually one of the requirements of the applicant per OCSD ordinance. Justification number two, the delay that results from requiring a building permit prior to a developer being allowed to pay for the water service connection charges ensures that the developer is paying their fair share since the district doesn't have standby fees. The easiest way to answer this question is to give the developers a choice between having to pay for their water service connection fees upfront or paying for them as they go, as the building permit requirement allows. Big developers will not want to pay for fees up front because they know if they retain this money in an interest-bearing account, it will more than offset the annual average increase in OCSD water service connection fees. If OCSD got the fees up front, as ordinance requires, then the district could benefit from the interest earned on this money. And I've got my little chart up there kind of explaining what happens with money. In fact, by not following OCSD ordinances, the staff have cost the ratepayers of the district money while giving big developers a break.
Did you want to explain any more about the...
Yeah, I'd like just to show. This is kind of our interest-bearing accounts that we have, and this is the interest that we are now receiving from those accounts. And probably the easiest way to show it is by dividends per unit. And this is just, you know, kind of a setup deal for 46 units and how much the total water charges would be if you accepted all the money up front instead of using the building permit requirement. This shows the annual dividend simple interest. Split out by 46 units, it's $342.40. This is making 3.75% interest. Our actual annual yearly connection fee increase per unit is about $148. Revenue loss per unit is, in this example, $194.40. And that's the one making the least amount of interest, that's 3.75%. And so LAIF is 4.96, Low County Fund is 4.56, and Wawa Bank is 4.52. All of those make more money for the yearly annual increase if you have upfront fees collected instead of waiting for the building permit.
Can I say something about this? Connection fees have to be based on actual or projected cost. If we did this, the developers could claim, justifiably so, that we're charging them more than they should be paying. You can't make money on connection fees. You don't have to lose money, but you can't make money. And basically, this concept would have us earning interest on the developer's money when it's really still the developer's money. Until we spend it, it's the developer's money. It's just not appropriate to do that. And I don't think it's legal to do that either.
Have you seen this packet before tonight?
No, I haven't seen it.
There's a letter here. It's not signed by Phil Davis, but it has his name on it. And it states March 27th, 2006, subject APN number. And there's a statement that's highlighted here. It says, estimated fees are scheduled for a significant increase in the near future. And ultimately, we're looking at $212,358.86. Am I reading this right? Did Tacken prepay this money, or is that?
Yes.
So they prepaid this.
Right. That was the agreement for the well site, my understanding.
But we don't know if we have an easement recorded.
No, I no.
For
I,
that.
Right.
I personally would like to, you know, to see Phil here, so we could ask him questions. And since we don't, there's questions here not asked, I think we need some answers more to the board to make a legitimate decisions here. There's a lot of things I'm seeing here that aren't answered.
Well, can I respond to that?
Sure.
I think Mrs. Dean is under a misunderstanding of how the process works. In her initial letter, doesn't make a distinction between a stub, a service under the sidewalk, to get a parcel map approved, and actually connecting the services, which is when we charge the connection fees. You know, and this is saying the same thing the prior letter said, was that we require her to rip up her sidewalk and all that kind of stuff. If it's done properly, there's no requirement for connection fees, and there's no requirement to tear up the sidewalk. The point is, we provide the connections to the lot line, and we cap them off, and then you can get a parcel map, you can get whatever you need through the county without having to pay fees and without ever having to dig up the sidewalks because it's put over again. I think I haven't seen this. There's a lot of documentation in here. But what I'm seeing here is the same thing she said before. So you either understand what she said or you understand what I said in the staff report. There's no difference, and I don't see any new information here. It's just the same thing over again. That's what I see.
May I respond to that? I had to install my infrastructure for all of my lots. I had to put in all my sewer lines and stub them out to the actual lots so they could be connected. All of the water lines were stubbed out to the actual lots so they could be connected. Those were all in an easement that was those should have been paid for at the time. It's either bond it or pay for it. That's what the subdivision map requirement says. If I'm getting that wrong, then we need to get it, make it so that people understand. And then I've only checked 6 developments. Out of the 6, 2 had exceptions made. So I haven't had time to go into the files here and look for all the other exceptions, and I expect there to be many, many more. It needs to be addressed. If I can understand it, and I've been through this process, and others understand it a different way, maybe we need to relook at our ordinances and make those so they are understandable. We had a problem with a road. This is why our main goal was to codify and revamp our ordinances. And I think this is just shows what needs to be done. That's where I stand. I think we need to make it simpler for people to understand this process. Ms. Dahl said she couldn't understand and she didn't have any procedures. Some of those things should be happening here. That is, it's a disservice to any of the other ratepayers that you have to come in and get into semantics, and it's not clear-cut, and it's not following the rules.
Could I ask why we're just getting this packet tonight, and we're expected to consider this and deal with this? You give us something right when you began to talk? I mean, you know better than that.
I didn't have it ready until tonight. I was putting it together at the last minute, and if you want to delay this and wait till the next time, that's fine with me, too.
I think we just should settle it, but I just...
It's a lot of information.
It's a disservice, not only to you, but to us, and to the ratepayers of Oceana.
I think my part was fairly standard, and what I've described is right up front here. The rest was a supplement for people to look at later and read later and that we deal with later.
Oh, it looks like there's a lot of issues just besides this here that we're going to have to deal with in the future. And Alex, what do you think? You're our legal counsel, and you were involved with attack and development. You've been obviously involved with Ms. Dean in her development and other developments here in the community of Oceano.
45 days. So tomorrow I'm going to go back and check the copy of the final map that I believe I have in that old Avocado subdivision file from when we did the business with the sewer line, and we will check with the title company. So I think I can confirm that we did get the well site easement. Separate and apart from that, the general manager made a point about some potential concern about collecting fees up front and then holding them for a very, very long time. Under AB 1600, which is the fee mitigation statute, there are restrictions on how long you can hold somebody's money for future improvements or future services that you're supposed to provide. Now, AB 1600 generally applies to situations where somebody's doing a project at point A and there's a traffic light 2 miles away and they've got to contribute money, or there's a site for a proposed traffic light 2 miles away, and because of the nexus between the project and the traffic light, they have to contribute some money towards that traffic light, and it might be 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years before the agency installs the light. And that's primarily where it applies. This is a little different because these really are on-site improvements that have to do with her particular project. So I'm not 100% certain that AB 1600 applies, but I think there is at least something there that Patrick that is talking about that has some validity to it. I also know that it is fairly common among a number of jurisdictions that are trying to be developer friendly to have arrangements whereby even though the entire subdivision is approved at one time, to not collect fees such very much like these until the permit gets pulled on each individual house. That is very common, especially over the last 5 to 10 years between the time the fee letter was sent and the time the desire to come in and pay them is occurring. And the fact that we don't have the district, for whatever policy reasons, chose not to use a standby water charge as the way to deal with this, but rather the incremental increases. And that's just history. It's what happened, and it's what we have to deal with. I'm not saying anybody did right or wrong there. It's just a little bit unusual. So you've got a difficult policy question here to make that I think Ms. Dean's very right. It does have long-term ramifications, and it might. And I think she's probably right that over the long haul, this issue that's been exposed needs to be examined, perhaps in the context of the codification that we're doing, to be able to look at it carefully, set some policy, try and make sure it's clear policy, get it in writing, and not have to deal with these issues in the future. The immediate issue at hand, that's your decision to make. I can understand why she feels abused, but I also think there is a legitimate issue on the agency side in terms of trying to properly manage the money and the risk associated here.
I guess one of my concerns would be this section 220. I'd like your opinion on what that means in terms of the applicant shall have complied with 217, 219, and all other applicable provisions, and to either pay all fees and meet all district requirements or pay all fees and post bonds guaranteeing the construction.
Well,
I'm
sorry, go ahead.
I guess my question is, when would that indicate that somebody is required to pay fees under our existing ordinance?
Well,
217.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I think we need to be very cautious about taking things out of context. This is a paragraph out of our rules and regulations. We have resolutions, rules, and ordinances, and you need to look at everything in context rather than just reading two sentences. I mean, it's easy for somebody to go into any document and pull out a couple of sentences and say, this proves my point. It doesn't. It doesn't necessarily prove anything.
Sort of tagging on to what Patrick is saying, you can't approve a subdivision until the fees and permits that are required in relationship to the subdivision are paid. I don't think that necessarily means the building permit for the individual house. And it certainly wasn't the case here, and I don't think it was the case with Tacken. But how many of us have seen situations where a developer builds a large subdivision? That developer doesn't plan on ever selling houses. They're going to sell lots. And they might sell those lots over a period of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years. As a matter of fact, the subdivision I live in, we've lived in it almost 20 years, and there is still one empty lot
that
nobody's built on.
The other thing, I'm not aware of the district approving subdivision maps. That's
well, the district doesn't approve a subdivision map, but we do provide will serve letters, and we do have to review it when somebody goes to the county to assure that we can provide fire service and garbage service
approval by the district. We don't approve anything. So I think this whole paragraph is moot.
Well, at least the first part of it where it says for recording of a final map.
Yeah.
But the part that has to do with installing any part of a public service under the jurisdiction of the district, to the extent that we have to install something, Before we do it in connection with the subdivision, there's things we have to get.
Well, not only that, but you pulling something out of a document that we receive here at this meeting is very difficult, because I've read through many of these rules and different issues, and you'll read a rule and it'll say this, and then year, two, three later something else is written that overrides it, that completely does away with this one, and that's not showing up anywhere near this rule. It's showing up in another document somewhere else, and this rule then is replaced with something else, and then that one gets replaced after that with another item. So to be able to actually research what the last one was, you can't do that from just receiving this at this late point in time. So we don't even know that this is the latest rules on this subject, which is why the codification is important to have to get done and get finished. I've seen that several times. And that's just typical as a organization goes on through time, they change things.
There was a question when Ms. Dean first spoke up there where she said that they're consider request from Pamela Dean for refund of connection fees. And she stated there was a confusion there, and I'm not sure what there was. If maybe Ms. Dean could tell us.
It is not a refund of connection fees. Had I been able to pay my fees when I wanted to without the requirement for a building permit, I would have paid a certain amount of money. What happened in this situation and the increase for the front footage charge went up 1,000% about a year and a half after that. And any new connection fees are going to be substantially more. I was prepared to pay for those at that time and was told I was not able to because I did not have a building permit. So the building permit policy is usurping anything in the rules and ordinances, and I would be glad to just sit and wait till everybody gets a chance to review this, including legal counsel, to see where we stand with this. If I can't figure it out, and Patrick and I are at odds with what we believe to be correct, how is anybody in this community supposed to figure it out? I just think it's a difficult situation and it needs to be addressed.
You were saying that you would have paid all those fees if you would have been allowed to. And I thought in all these mounds of paper we've been getting, you had made a statement someplace, I would have liked the opportunity to decide whether I wanted to do it. Did I dream that?
The opportunity was not granted me. I came
did
in to pay my
say,
fee.
Did your letter to the district say, you didn't say I would have paid them, I believe. I think you said you would have liked the opportunity to decide whether you wanted to do that.
I said that at that time I was told I needed a building permit, and it appears that other people had other options applied to them that were different.
I'm not sure the money involved here, what the total figure is, if we were to make a decision.
You know, it's going to cost money to have the attorney look at it. If you think that it's going to change your opinion on where you're at right now, on what you think on it, then he should look at it. If you don't think it's going to change your opinion, then why spend the money?
Got awful quiet in here.
I think our attorney is on a monthly stipend, and I'm not sure what his workload is usually.
If the issue is costs for the legal work, you'll recall that you're under a banking arrangement. The district has plenty of hours, so it's not going to appreciably. It won't affect the. What you get charged this month or next month or the month after that. I think it's really a policy question of whether you want to decide this tonight or whether you want to have us take a deeper look at it, particularly given the general manager's comments, whether you want us to take a deeper look at it.
I guess my concern would be that we're, you know, that whatever the process was in conformance with our ordinance and rules, and I believe the general manager's conclusion is that it was. Is that?
That's my conclusion, yes. It's not that there's no ambiguity, but I don't think what we've been presented changes the facts or the issues at all.
I think we need to settle this and then
try to change and work with these rules until after that codification, and that's why I asked.
Aren't these were the rules according to the general manager at the time?
Yeah, at the time.
So that's what we need to deal with.
I agree.
We need to take care of this issue once and for all and be done with it.
Okay, any public comment on this item? Hearing none, then, do we have a motion to proceed?
Do you need a motion to proceed?
A motion to act on this
per request.
One way or another.
Okay. You would either accept and approve the request, reject it, or if you want to defer it for some time period and instruct staff, whether it's the general manager or me, to do something, you do that. You basically have three choices.
I myself would suggest getting a better legal opinion, but that's just what I'm looking.
That's your motion?
If that could be a motion, I guess I would ask that we have a better legal opinion before we make a decision.
So to maybe frame that motion a little more specifically, without having a second yet, the motion might be to continue the matter 2 weeks and instruct staff and legal counsel to confer and research the matter further and report back to the board.
That's exactly what I said.
Okay, is there a second? Hearing no second, is there another motion to proceed in a different direction?
Does that one dies for lack of a second, correct?
Yes, it does. If we do not take one of the courses of action that you've outlined,
I would call it the ostrich with your head in the sand approach, not even vote to reject it, then it's functionally rejected, but it seems to me that if that's what you choose to do, there should be a motion to accomplish that so that there's a clear record and you know, the public deserves some action from the board, I think.
I agree with that, and I think that I don't want to just fail to act on this tonight because it theoretically would then come back ad infinitum. So I agree that I think we should take some action. Is there, again, perhaps another motion to either approve, deny, or direct staff to collect more information? I then will make a motion that we approve the recommendation of the staff and deny the motion.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve the staff report and deny the motion. Patrick, could I have a roll call, please?
Sure.
First of all, let me ask for public comment. Mm-hmm. Hearing none. Roll call, please.
President Hill?
Yes.
Director Mann?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Vice President Bookout?
Yes.
Okay. The request has been denied. I think we've all learned the importance of getting our documents, ordinances, other official district policies in a clear, concise.
The motion that I previously made, I still stand by. And, you know, this, the newspaper will be out there and they're going to ask some story and they're going to look into this a little bit more. You know, this is something that, you know, it's, I'm sure it's not going to end here. Time will tell. And, you know, we have to make sure that we are representing the people and that we're treating the people right. And we need to be sure of what we're, the services we're providing to the people and how we provide them. We live in a small community, and this community is going to grow. And we're going to have a lot of people move into our community as this community develops in the future. So we need to make sure that everything is up front to the people when they come in. They are aware of what their fees will be and when they should be paid. And in the future, you know, I hope that, you know, this type of stuff doesn't come up to the board and that every customer that we have has a clear understanding from the beginning of what they're going to pay, when they're going to pay it, how it's going to be paid. And I'm, you know, I still have a concern about the other issue of our well site and how that was handled. And I hope that we will research that even more and find out where that stands. As, you know, well, our utility operations supervisor is not here, so it'd be hard for him, you know, he would probably have a better understanding than we do. That's it.
I should be able to have an answer on that well site issue within a couple of days.
Okay, moving on, if Director Dean will rejoin us. Item 9A, this is administrative items, fiscal year 2007-08 mid-year budget review.
Yes, the board has been provided with a an attachment that shows a summary income statement for each of the funds. I'd just like to briefly go through each fund, talk about where we were at the end of December. The administration fund, which is shown on page one, and admin revenues are projected to exceed expenditures by $62,000. Fire department, if there are no questions on admin. Fire department, also on page one, total revenues are projected to be $736,000, which is $30,000 less than budgeted. That's primarily due to a decrease in tax revenues. There's no certainty that we're going to have a decrease in tax revenues, but my analysis, I would project we're going to have a slight decrease. Total expenditures for the year are projected at $725,000. That exceeds budget by $59,000, but that includes an additional $12,000 for reserve staffing, an additional $9,000 for dispatch, an additional $25,000 for fire consolidation, and an additional $8,000 for maintenance, as well as $25,000 for equipment. So when you add all those extra expenses in there, we're doing pretty well in balance.
Patrick, before you go on further, yeah, were the restricted reserves considered in this analysis?
No, I haven't looked at the reserves at all.
So then it's not a complete analysis, is it?
That's correct, and I studied that at the beginning.
So
yeah. This is only the income and expense.
It just doesn't give the total information, and that seems to be one of our problems lately, not getting total information.
Well, this tells you what our operating situation is. I agree, it doesn't address reserves. I can't, I've had difficulty getting information on reserves.
Well, so maybe we should just put this aside to a later date?
I have never, at a mid-year budget review, in my experience, 15 years working with cities and special districts, we've never discussed reserves. We're looking at the where the district is operating. If we're over or under.
Not to argue with you.
Okay.
But that was one of the specific things that Director Dean and myself last year, and when we got ready to set our budget for this year, is we wanted to see and talk about reserves, and we're not. So.
Well, okay, two things. I wasn't here last year, so I had no knowledge of that. And the second thing is, if the board doesn't want me to continue, I'll just quit.
Okay.
That's not what's being said.
A relevant question, or?
Well, I think the short answer is yes. It's maybe a little off point because you really are here about the operating funds. But since some information on the reserves was requested in the past, even though Patrick didn't know about it, perhaps some of the issues he's had in trying to find that might be helpful. I don't think you want to spend a lot of time talking about it, but
I would like to know the status of the reserves. I've been trying to figure it out for months, but. The AS400 system is a very complex system to understand, and I frankly don't understand it yet. And the people who do understand it have not been able to give me the information I need. That's the bottom line.
You know, we're dealing with the community's money here. You know, right. We're dealing with our towns, estates, and we need those answers. And if you're having trouble finding them, mm-hmm. I think we as a board here, and this does pertain to this, so we as a board here need to make sure that whatever we can do to make sure that you get your answers, because this is the community of Oceano's money. Each one of the taxpayers out there, this is their money, and they need to know where the reserves are for the community of Oceano.
I don't disagree.
And at the same point, you haven't been here that long, so... Mm-hmm. You wouldn't understand most likely where they are, and you've had two general managers prior to you. One was here for a very lengthy time, and the one for a very short time. So just that would be good to find out.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Well, there's a anytime you take on a position or an operation as complicated as a government agency. And with each of them having different accounting systems and those type of things, there's a tremendous amount of learning curve, tremendous amount of new things you have to absorb and have to learn. I think we need to have patience in dealing with that, and to allow our general manager to the time he needs to get the information that he's looking for.
A good term for it, and just understand that it's an operating snapshot, and I don't know that we would need to receive and file it or do anything other than just understand the snapshot at the moment.
Yeah.
The
I just don't want to receive and file
it. I think we need to go over this and look at it in depth a little bit more here. But I do have a question because something came up here which pertains to this, which... If we were to perform a forensic audit, would that help you in finding out where those are?
No, because they'd have to have that data to be able to do the audit.
Okay.
It's not a matter of... It's a matter of getting the data. If you can get the data and give it to the auditors, then I'd have the data I need.
They might know how to get into that machine and find it.
I guarantee you they don't.
No, okay.
I guarantee you.
Okay, so I guess then... pardon us for the interruption.
Okay.
We'll proceed with the hearing the snapshot.
All right. So the bottom line on the fire fund is that revenues are projected to exceed expenditures by $11,000. The water fund, there's an error in the report on, on line 74. It's not an error in the report. It was an error in the way the budget was created. The budget under major litigation, it had a negative amount down for an expenditure, and you just can't do that. But that's the way it is. There's nothing I can do about it. But that was an error in the way the budget was prepared. Other than that, projected revenues are $1.9 million, which is $120,000 less than budgeted. The reason for that is because of a shortage or a lack of connection fees. We're just not receiving the connection fees that were budgeted. $82,000 were budgeted. First 6 months, we've only received $5,000. That's huge. State water project connection fees were budgeted at $50,000. We've only received $3,000. So there's a huge shortage in revenues in the water fund. Bottom line is expenditures are projected to exceed revenues by about $119,000 for the year. Sewer fund, also on page two, revenues are projected at $636,000, which is $21,000 more than budgeted. Expenditures are projected at $687,000, which is $74,000 more than budgeted. There's $30,000 in engineering expenditures in the sewer fund, which are for the earthquake. Total expenditures, $64,000, so there will be a surplus of revenues over expenditures of about $2,000. Street lighting revenues are projected at $52,000, expenditures at $47,000. So revenues will exceed expenditures by about $4,000. In the litigation fund, we have budgeted $20,000. It looks like we'll only spend about $10,000, and that's a good thing. In the sheriff's facility, revenues are $9,500, expenditures are $4,000. So we should have about $5,500 more in revenues than expenditures. As I say at the very beginning of the staff report, I'm not recommending any adjustments to the budget until I can do an analysis of the reserves. And once that's done, then I'll come back to the board requesting action to do budget adjustments.
Okay. Any other questions on the snapshot?
Yes, I have one. And it's concerning the water connection fees.
Mm-hmm.
I know that we've had, in the last 6 months, we've had requests for 44 will serve letters or 44 developments, and that's just in the last 6 months. Prior to that, it was probably at least that much. And I'm thinking people should be at the stage where they be putting in their, placing their sewer and water mm-hmm. connection fees. What do you attribute the... I mean, it totally stopped, even though things were still pushing on through. Do we need a way to track these kinds of things? Because we don't. We don't have a way to really audit the connection fees.
I'm not sure to what point.
To match them to the will serve letters and those.
Well, I was just going to say will serve letters don't match to connection fees. Will serve letters saying we'll serve water later. You have to come back with a permit to pay the connection fee. So you can issue a lot of will serve letters and not get any connection fees.
Right, right. But you would expect more than one or even less than one to be showing up from all the activity that's been going on in here. And just driving around, you can see that people are still building.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if they haven't paid the connection fee, you don't turn the water on, do you?
Right, that's correct.
No, what's correct? You turn it on?
No, you don't turn it on until they pay the connection fees.
They must not be finished.
As soon as the public decides, for whatever reason, that the housing market has improved, all those people will be in with permits, and you'll get a big slug of connection fees. I can't tell you if that'll happen in 6 days, 6 months, or 6 years, but that's what'll happen.
I think you're exactly right. It's people are just watching the economic situation, and a lot of projects have been kind of put on hold to see an improvement before they go on. So I think what we're looking at is the general economic situation and how people are responding to that. And it's a contraction in the number of people that are going forward with projects mm-hmm. and ending up getting them connected.
It could be, but only one seems very minuscule for what's been done out there.
It shows
I can't answer that either, but right. It's a concern.
Yeah. You know, we do have growth going on in the community, and the communities, I think, just up the street here, it's kind of unique to see a less than half a block up the street here. We have a new house mm-hmm. or a little project coming in, and they obviously don't have a connection fee yet, but we would have collected on that.
I don't know. I don't know the status of the project.
Yeah. Nice to see, though. They may not, because I think they're just doing groundwork right now.
Yeah. Another issue would be the remodels and things that you see going on at facelifts.
Yeah.
Don't have connection fees.
No, no, no. So well, the circumstances
of each one are different.
The lady that was here earlier this evening, she wouldn't have had a connection fee. She'd already had her service there.
Okay, comment or questions from the public on the report? Okay, thank you for the snapshot of our income and expenses. Item number 9B, review of rules of order. This is a consideration of recommendation of district legal counsel to amend the district rules of order, which is something we ask him to do annually, or are supposed to ask the review annually.
Yes, Mr. President, members of the board, members of the public, you have before you my staff report. And the idea here is to give you an opportunity to look at the proposed changes that I've put into it and to provide us with some guidance. If you were to say tonight, this looks good, it never got back to the board. This, what you have before you tonight, is essentially the same product as was prepared at that time in response to some board comments and some comments that I had, other than the fact that we have added a provision for the 10 o'clock curfew. I've also given you a red line or a black line of the document showing all the editing changes and a clean copy. I can go through each of the changes individually. They're pretty straightforward. If you want me to, I can. But other than that, I'd be happy to try and answer any questions you might have or take any comments that you have.
I have some comments, but first of all, let's see if there's any questions.
Alex, in the rules of order, election of officers would be part of the rules of order?
Yes.
And at this time, we can have giving some suggestions, which the board can actually act on to add things to our rules of order. If I'm not mistaken,
we could certainly add something, or we could change one of the existing rules of order and how things work under it.
Okay.
If there's a consensus. Among the board is the direction we want to go in.
Yeah. A while back, I did some research at the district office here, and I provided some papers mm-hmm. to our general manager, which provided those papers to each of the directors. And we have a letter dated December 11th, 1985, number 10 of minutes of one of our meetings. It says election of officers. President Boffman asked if there was a written policy regarding who represents the district on the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District Board. DLC Shipsey stated that he would check into this and get back to the board. Director Allen stated his belief that policy has been to use the president and vice president as representative and alternate, respectively. The sanitation district, the meetings I've gone, dealing with the other communities that are other Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach who are present there, generally you have the president there, and it's observed that the vice president is also probably your most vocal points in any district or city council.
Personally, that's a matter of policy.
It doesn't
for you
have anything
decide.
To do with the appropriate. It's what the board wants to do.
Yeah.
Well, I would like to ask that be changed for future years. I don't see an answer to this letter or to this these minutes of And I didn't see an answer to the December 11th, 1985, and I don't believe there was any changes made at that time. But that does seem more appropriate for our community to have the president and vice president on this particular committee or board.
I would like to just talk a minute. I hope that we will change the way our officers are elected. I would like to see us go to like many of the other CSDs and cities where it rotates. In other words, those that haven't been the president yet would be the president, 1, 2, 3, whoever's got the most longevity. And then as new people are elected to come on, then they would get online to have their turn at it. That would split us. So we don't end up where we had a president at one time. I know some people hate it when you talk about past history, but we had one president for like 10 years or something like that. Think how long Rick Searcy was the chair.
Yeah.
So that's what I would like to see. I would like to see that we change with next, you know, change our rules so that next December it would, and, you know, we either draw straws or go by seniority. It would be Pamela, myself, and you, because we have not been president yet, providing you're reelected. And then,
by the way, I'm running.
And well, we are. I'm sure everybody knows that. It would be either Pamela or me as president, and the other person would be vice president. The next year, the vice president moves up, and so then each year it's a different. It moves on up. Saying that, as far as the sanitation district is, I don't care who we would select to be the representative there, but we certainly would not have served us well for me to be on that or you to be on that, perhaps. Well, maybe you, but not me. So some things get rotated and some things don't. But that's what I'd like to see happen.
Yeah. You know, with your comments there, when Jim and I were elected, Enverne, you were the vice president that year, and you were on the sanitation district. Did a great job, I should note. I believe the following year, Jim as president. The following year, Jim wasn't president. Time goes by so fast. There was one year where that's the following year you were not president, but.
I've never been president.
No, Jim. But I believe you were on sanitation that year with Vern Sanitation as alternate.
Probably. I've been on it several times.
Yeah. But seeing the rotation, I look at, and I like what you've stated about rotating presidents. You know, that is a very good thing, and it keeps new blood, you know, out there, new ideas. The board doesn't get stagnant. As you mentioned, one director in the previous years was on it for 11 years straight. At the same point, I think the sanitation district should have the second in charge, the vice president. And that should be something that the board here, it's passed, and that's something that we have always. Because then you have your president and your vice president talking with other communities, and the five of us have the power here to nominate the vice president. We're putting our faith in him ultimately together to represent our district amongst other districts, just as we elect our president to represent us.
Well, if we go to the rotation, there won't be any after the initial selection. There wouldn't be any electing, because it would just, as you come on, you're online, and when it's your turn, it's your turn.
I think the suggestion for a rotation has a lot of merit, that it does allow fair and equitable. All of the board members are elected as representatives of the community, and all of them should have the election process, which can be unnecessarily divisive, perhaps,
yeah.
And it may end up being counterproductive. That establishing, well, no one would be compelled to serve if they didn't want to, but if it was their turn, they would rightfully assume the chair. So I would tend to support that modification to the rules.
And I don't really care about the San district. I mean, whoever is the president, they might not want to be it. They might say that Pamela would be the one to serve on the San district because she liked it, and
you know,
and she was gonna, and she might, that might not be her turn to be president.
I think leaving the sanitation district, it would be a standing position for the vice president or for the president to go with the sanitation. If he rejects it, then it goes to the vice president on down. I see importance with that. As far as the rotation with the president, I think that's a good thing.
Can we divide it into two issues then?
Yeah, but at the same thing, I think, you know, for the next, we have an election coming up, we should probably draw straws for the next election as who takes the president, rather than go forward right in the process here. Because who would be the next in line?
Me.
It would be you.
Yeah, after yeah. 10 years.
But, yeah, and you're entitled.
Yeah. I think if we establish a rotation, it would be first Barbara, then Pamela, then two of the people who are elected in the next election.
Okay.
Well, we could have staff look at how other communities do their rotations.
Well, it's getting it started.
Yeah.
Is how you do
but
it.
But as far as whether we do a rotation or whether we elect president and vice president, you know, there's arguments on both sides of that fence, and it's not, you know, it's just which way do we want to do it is what we really need to decide. And I really don't care one way or the other. Rotation is fine with me. But it always has been in the past. It, as far as sanitation district, it has been policy that the president sits on that district. But we also it is the president who assigns committee assignments, and so the president has that ability to sign that to himself or to or if he does not want it to.
When I brought that up, I agree. The president, that should be his position. But I'm more or less talking about the alternate, which should be the vice president for that. As this is an important position where we put our faith in our president to sit on that board, likewise, you should put this same faith and importance in the vice president to sit on that board in the president's absence of that. As yeah, an alternate.
I think all of us are equally elected representatives of the people, and all of us have equivalent standing as board members.
Yeah, and you're basically, what you're deciding is, do we make it a policy of this is that the vice president has to be the alternate, or do we still leave it in the hands of the president to decide who the alternate is?
I'd like to leave it in the hands of the president.
Yeah, that's basically your decision.
And the rules do state that the president makes appointments subject to approval of the board.
Correct. And the board could, if the board is in disagreement with that appointment, the board cannot approve it.
Although the discussion raises kind of an interesting issue. What the rules of order say is that you make appointments to standing committees, but I don't think the rules address appointments to those third-party bodies. Those aren't committees of the board. So I'm trying to remember if that's embodied in an ordinance or another resolution, because it's not in the rules of order.
Well, can we?
I'll figure that out.
We should research that and perhaps expand this discussion if necessary to say standing committees and other jurisdictional entities.
I think we should bring this back to talk about it some
both?
More.
might as well do both at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, looking at this letter, December 11th, 1985, not, and I take it back, it's not a letter, it's minutes from a OCSD meeting. DLC Shipsey stated his feelings that there should be some board action on this issue. It was moved by Director Senna, seconded by Director Twitchell, and unanimously carried to direct Director Allen to attend the January board meetings for the sanitation district. But, and I just read something wrong here, but there was
whether we select officers either by election or rotation. There's a little glitch in our rules here that say that the election shall be the first order of business after the call to order and roll call. And the question always comes up, well, gee, what do we do with the flag salute? And so whether it's
opening ceremonies, maybe?
That, I think that would be appropriate. That we could discuss that as either the opening of the meeting or whatever, or else specifically include the flag salute so that that's
absolutely
taken care of.
We'll get that in there.
Such that, and that would work either whether we went with election or rotation. Mm-hmm.
I had comments on preparation of minutes. I didn't want to, if you wanted to continue, that's fine.
Let's go ahead and hear the comment, and we can just proceed through it. And if anybody has additional comments, we'll just proceed through it then. Is that a good way to do it? The comment about the flag salute was on the second page. Any other comments on that page? Or any comments on the first page? Moving on then to page 3, 4, 5, 6.
Five is preparation of minutes.
Okay.
And I had a question on 4.2. I thought we had decided about minute changes, about changing those minutes to report what people say a little, not really explicitly, but just a...
You know, I recall there was a discussion about it.
Yeah.
Off the top of my head, I don't recall what the outcome of that discussion was, but you... You are correct. The issue was raised.
It was raised, and I thought we were, and it wasn't an ordinance. It wasn't anything. It was just directing, I guess, the GM or the secretary to give a little more background when people spoke and to just describe simply what they spoke about. And the other thing was concerning tapes, since we no longer have tapes. So,
you know, just very.
Action minutes only, was it?
Huh?
Were we going to do action minutes only?
Yeah, it was action minutes only because we had the disc that had the whole meeting on it. I think that's the way that ended up.
I'm not sure.
There was a discussion which I think the board in its policy decision ultimately rejected, expressing some concern about the fact that even though we have this great new technology where everything is kept digitally now, there's an issue in record all sorts of recording media as to whether the machines to be able to translate that recording media will still be around. How many of us still have old LP records that maybe you can't find?
You don't have any?
Well, I've got some. I just don't have anything I can play them on.
I can give you some 8-tracks too.
I
have a question about that disc, and this might be something we might want to... When we do a meeting, if we're going to use that as record, the public can come in and make a public records request to obtain that disc or have a copy made. Is that something that, you know, we don't want to just let our personal copy go out to a residence?
We would have to control sending it out to have a copy made and charge the person for the copy. If that's the only copy we have.
Well, anyone can call AGP and buy their own copy.
They can get a copy of nominal charge from AGP.
That's possible, too.
They don't have to get it from us. We just have to tell them where to get it.
Or come watch it here.
So we can make that available for them to come watch it.
Well, I think we're required to.
Yeah.
Well, we have already for certain members of the public.
Minutes have to be kept for how long?
The statutory rule is what is stated here. You only are required to maintain the you said minutes.
You said minutes.
The electronic recording is only required to be kept 90 days. Minutes are forever, barring a fire or flood or something like that.
So we don't want to make the electronic media our minutes, our official minutes.
I'm a little fuzzy on it right now, but I seem to recall that when we looked at this a year or two ago, we came to the conclusion that you cannot legally make the electronic media the formal minutes. You have to do it by paper.
Right. So how much of the formal minutes do we want to keep on paper is the question we have to decide.
Well, that was the action items, or that was what we said before.
Yeah, yes. I think now that...
When somebody would come and say, and I said... Yeah. Jane brought the jelly, not Jane brought the jam. And then we were telling him, all right, bring that back next time. And then somebody else would find something. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the little.
Very well. It was a big pain.
Well, what we used to have was tapes that never got taped. So I'd like to keep our discs as long as possible.
There certainly is a change that needs to be made in 4.6 that drops the reference to tape or film, but it would probably be a video, electronic media, digital video.
Current electronic
media.
Product.
Right. Remove the allowance to dispose of them after 90 days. I think that's pretty clearly...
We don't want to make them required. We don't want to make the district required to hold those things forever.
How much space does a district?
That's a policy decision for you. I think that's what I heard the board decide some time ago.
That's what we asked for. Yeah, to hold them forever or however long they would be reasonably used.
And we have learned that CDs that at one time we thought were indestructible aren't indestructible. They do wear out over time, so it's certainly possible 5 or 10 years from now, or 20 years from now, that one of them will be unreadable. That is definitely a possibility.
Well, fortunately, AGP will probably have a record of these all the meetings in 5 or 10 years in some
format.
And theirs
might be unreadable too.
Yeah, and they could be. Is there a way?
Well, they may not be around in 30 years.
There a way that we could? You know, we were talking about doing a district working on our website. Is there a way that we could take each meeting and maybe put it in some banking system where, and I know this sounds really hard, but that way the public always has a record of all meetings.
JP? I don't disagree necessarily with that idea, but I think it's off track here in terms of the consideration of just the rules of order, which is the agenda item.
But what I'm going with that is that would be a way to put this, what we've just been talking about, and having it available to the people all the time. You know, it's a way of keeping records. There's servers that can retain this, and if it was on our website, our minutes are there pretty much.
A comment on page 7, it says 7.8, resolution 1998-19 is incorporated into these bylaws and attached here to as reference. I've never seen that.
Okay, when we bring this back, I'll make sure that a copy gets attached. And I remember looking at it one time to see what it said, because I asked myself the same question, and I can't recall right now.
I actually do have a copy of it, but I've not ever seen it attached to these bylaws.
Oh, okay.
So if we're going to do it, we need to do it. And if not, we need to probably drop it out or figure out what it says and actually state it here. Moving to page 8, the discussion of directors traveling on district business, is that still viable with the current state regulations for travel by...
Probably not.
I'm sorry, which one are you on?
This is page 8. It's 8.5B, B. Baker. For my coworkers watching, notice that I said Baker and not Bravo.
I'll have to go back and look at the recently adopted travel policy, but I think it still allows a per diem. It just has to be, there's just a reasonableness standard. But I'll go back and check that, and if this is incorrect, we'll get it cleaned up.
Okay, that's my only concern, is just to make sure that that's current with existing state regulations. Then there's a conflict in, as I read it, in 9.2A on page 8, where it says committee members should be appointed by the board. I believe the previous 1.4F says committee members should be appointed by the president with concurrence of the board.
That's correct. You're right. That's why we bring this back to you.
Page 9 in 11.1 has, it says recently a couple of times, and that'll date this pretty fast, I think. I would strike the word recently and just put in changes have been made, something like that.
You talking about the second to the last line?
Second to the last line, and then about the middle of the paragraph it says, if we're going to do that, or else incorporate it into the text.
If those are all the comments, what I would propose to do is to bring back to you at the next meeting another version of this, accepting all of the changes that are marked here, and then showing only the further changes that we've talked about tonight, and a resolution to accept. Well, you may have some issues with the way we do the rotation.
Let's just bring it back for discussion.
All right, we'll just bring it back for discussion then.
And if there's anything additional, we'll discuss that then too.
Okay, fair enough.
Now, what did you come up with? You come up with the rotation is the way that we decided.
Well, the consensus that I think I'm hearing is that you would rotate the president and vice president, or rotate the office's president and vice president. The most senior person who has not served as the president before would serve as the president. The next most senior person who has not served would serve as the vice president. The vice president would therefore move up to the presidency. If you end up with a situation where people are equal in tenure, then you would draw lots. And I need to address in there, I don't think it'll be rocket science, but I need to address in there what happens if somebody declines. And that's how the rotation would go. I also need to look at the ordinance and resolutions, or maybe the faster way to do it would be to ask Ms. Davis where the authority for appointments to intra-jurisdictional agencies comes from. And then, assuming that it's just been handled by tradition, the way you've been doing it, and not by some sort of other authority, then we would get it into these rules of order.
Okay. That's something that Mr. Shipsey is still around. He would probably have handled this at one time in the past. So that would be, Gina would have that in her Rolodex someplace.
Yeah. Well, it's either going to be in her head, or I'll find it fairly quickly looking through the resolutions.
Never continued talking about that.
You certainly could try to create some sort of priority rights, but I think drafting something that's going to be workable would be very, very difficult, because if you have a member who's been serving for 10 years and they've spent the last 3 or 4 years serving on one of those agencies, Do you really want to take away the authority of the president and the rest of the board to make a change when you deem it appropriate to make a change? Is that person going to have some sort of ability to trump and say, no, I've always been on whatever agency it is, and I want to stay on it? I imagine I can draft something like that, but as a matter of policy, I don't think that's really the smart way to go.
The only thing that I was thinking in there is just something very simple that says when the president appoints committees, he keeps in mind the need to put people with the knowledge of these certain committees in those committees, and then still leave it up to the president's decision.
I certainly can put that sort of language in there, and those are good intentions. And in years when a board is getting along and things are working smoothly, it just happens and it's not a problem. When you have a contentious board, it becomes something that just adds to the contention. So I frankly would recommend against it, but if the board wants to do it, I certainly will put it in there. It's not a problem.
You have the experience on it. It's just something that that has come up that one or two or more of us have felt is an important way to run the district.
I would certainly agree that as a practical matter, that's something that whoever's making the appointments should give serious consideration to, because experience counts for something. But tying their hands or trying to articulate that in a reasonable way is, I think, is difficult.
Yeah, I didn't want to tie anybody's hands in that issue. I just wanted to be, I just wanted it somewhere said so that the person making that decision.
To item 10, report of district representatives. I attended the Finance Committee on January 28th, Personnel Committee on January 30th. I think the issues that were discussed there have already been discussed with the board, probably don't need to be further discussed unless my fellow committee members want to say something about it. The Fire Committee meeting on February 5th discussed the action we just took tonight. Barbie, you might want to comment further on that meeting. The Sanitation District took a number of actions. First of all, they had the annual operating report, which we'll have for a copy of it. I'll give this copy to Patrick to maintain in the district office. Anyone who's interested to come and look at that. We also received the independent auditor's report. I'll leave this copy again in the district office that anyone that wants to see the independent auditor's report of the sanitation district is welcome to come in and look at that. Briefly, the audit was very clean. It went very efficiently, and the sanitation district is in good financial shape. So the that was very good to hear and is continuing a long trend. Other issues that were addressed at the sanitation district dealt with approval of expenditures for major budget items for the most part. Another item was election of officers. I was elected as the president of the board for this year, and Tony Ferrara from Arroyo Grande is the vice president.
Who are the alternates?
The alternate would be the member from Grover Beach. That, I believe, is all that I have. Bill?
I have no committees, so I didn't attend any.
Okay. Vern?
I didn't have any committees that I attended over the last couple weeks, but I've got a pretty heavy schedule coming up next week, Monday the 18th at 6:30 in the evening here.
And Barbara?
You already talked about the finance and the fire. We took care of that, so nothing.
Okay. Moving on then. Any comments, first of all, from the public on this item? Hearing none. General manager items for discussion.
Yeah, I have two things. One, we processed the first utility billing adjustment under the new policy. The adjustment was for $111.37, which was $84 less than it would have been under the previous policy. So it was a routine request, and that's working. Guy was very happy to get his adjustment. We also, at the very end of last week, received a plan from PG&E for installing the light on Melody Lane, and so we're looking at the plans. I hope to return those to PG&E fairly soon.
Very good. I'm glad to hear that they...
Yeah, it wasn't 4 months. It was about 2.5, I think. Yeah.
That's good.
I'm impressed with you being able to handle the utility adjustment rather than come to the board and take the length of time it does. So thank you.
Sure.
Comment or questions from the public? Okay, moving on then, board member items for discussion. Pamela?
None.
Bill?
None.
Vern?
Nothing.
Barbara?
Well, I'm kind of curious. Might have been in the Friday report that we received 27 pages of minutes. Some of them are 28 years old from Mr. Bookout, and I don't understand why this was given to us. And when something's given to one of us and it goes in the packets or whatever, they make 17 copies. So these copies being made, if they were done at the district, cost the taxpayers $45.90. And this was given to me, and
to
I don't
give
understand
you,
why.
To respond to you, I think Alex Seamus will be looking into the how the election of Board of Officers on page 10, December 11th, 1985. You will see Alex will be looking into seeing how the rules of order go in, which you were just talking about.
Here, I have to say, I read the whole thing. And there are interesting nuggets of history in there occasionally, but I found it very distracting that there's no highlights, there's nothing to direct anybody's attention to any of this. It's just a collection of old records, and I have to agree that it does cost the district fairly significantly. I might suggest if we have a big block of stuff like this, that perhaps rather than investing in the staff time to do it, if perhaps the person who wanted to bring this to hand out it to the board would take it upon themselves to have it copied at a commercial copy shop rather than using the district staff time and resources to reproduce all of this, and then also to try to condense it down so that the recipient can make some sense of it.
Okay. This is provided to the board. It gives a little bit of history of things that have happened in the community in the past. There's a number of items in here. One of the items, a packet I was hoping actually to present to the board or to our general manager in the near future, is when I was going through some stuff, I found a whole list of state parks, alternative access, which we've talked a lot about alternative access going out to our sand dunes. And in the past, in our OCSD history, we've looked at alternative access, environmental access, many things that have come up since. I feel it's important that, and this is not up to me, but all these old minutes should be available to every director. And we have a packet in here where we can come in and read from year to year so we can understand what's happened in previous years as far as motions and actions that have happened in the community. We don't have that in our district here. Jim, you and I came in a couple of years ago when we first got elected, and we asked to see old minutes, and we were told that, oh, they're lost. We can't find them.
I think we were given all of the minutes that were available, and there was numbers of boxes of them, and they were made available, and we did look through them and saw a number of things.
The 1985 that's right here was not available. And at the past of Oceano, and how this district was formed, what was voted on, what was talked about, and I would like to see a compiling of years from the beginning of the district to current, where not that we, it's something that we take home ourselves, but if we want copies of it, it's readily available. If we as new, we're going to have a new election, we're going to have possibly new directors in here, and hopefully we will have, when that happens, we want them to know where the district began, what was voted on, so that they have an opportunity to see every issue of the community. How best to understand the community how can you understand what's happened in the community in the past without looking at what happened in the past? This is a living history here.
I'm looking at this from November 17th, 1982, review and approval of minutes at the regular meeting. If that was something you thought I ought to know, you should have highlighted that. What on that page did you think was important? Was it maybe water items?
We have a test well site.
Okay,
back
if that
then.
Wasn't highlighted or pointed out of what you wanted me to look at, I mean,
there's a lot of disjointed stuff here.
Well, I apologize if you guys felt like it wasn't worthwhile for you to look at the history here. I feel as an elected official that we need to have the ability to look back at what the previous boards have voted on and have talked about. Because if we don't have that, then we're not doing the community of Oceano a service representing them.
When a director comes in and looks at different papers and so within the mm-hmm. district, is that part of a request that they make that all of us get copies of, or is it when they request a copy of it that we get a copy of it?
It's more if they request a copy. And I'm, I think we have to use some discretion about, if a director ends up with 300 pages, I don't think we need to provide that to the directors. Just say that this information was looked at. I'll report that in the weekly report.
Well, I hope if somebody gets 300 pages, they're going to pay for it.
Well, to set the record straight, I did pay for this.
Did you?
I believe, $22 and something cents.
Well, you paid for your copy.
I paid for
you
my copy.
You didn't pay for their copy.
I totally agree that history is important to know, and I believe the records are basically here and are available for directors to come in and look at as they have the time and inclination to do that.
Aren't the minutes filed in the box by the year?
Yes, they are.
And it says, so if somebody, a new guy wants to come in, and he's got all the hours to sit there and read every minute that was taken since the 28 years that the district's been here, that's great. But to spend...
I think it was talked about just a little while ago that there was minutes missing... which Jim and I looked for.
Yeah. And they have since been found.
Perhaps one or two of those have been found, or maybe the whole collection has been found. That's good. And
we're delighted.
We'll take note of that.
Well, you got to remember the minutes have been moved twice since then, too. They were moved out of the fire department into storage where the staff has had the chance to go through and touch all the minutes, and then they move back out of storage back to the fire department, the old fire station, where the staff has had a chance to go through them again. So that would be normal that things would be found that were not found earlier.
And I surely don't think that there was a plot on anybody's part that works at this district who didn't want you to see 1985 minutes.
Well, I was concerned that I don't want to see some great record archive expenditures carried on. I think the The annual boxes of records that I've seen include all of the minutes. The directors are welcome to look through those and glean whatever information from the past that is relevant. Quite a bit of that stuff is obsolete. It's been changed by subsequent actions, and there's other things going on, and new things come out all the time. So I'm not ready to support, nor would I support any kind of a compilation or any kind of review of those old minutes, other than having it available as it is pretty much now in those files to be available if somebody wants to look through them.
Yeah, it'd be very expensive to do. And
recently, I was on a committee for the SVRV, the off-road park, that I was appointed to by, I believe, you, Jim. And in there, I felt a shame that I didn't have that knowledge, and I didn't know that those minutes existed in a box that you mentioned is in the room, Barbara. So I definitely will now be coming in to look in the boxes that are in a room, and I feel that each director should have that available to them.
Well, the reason I know that minutes end up in a box, because I don't know if it was last year or the year before last, I had an issue, and I sat and I read 6 months' worth of minutes, took the page I needed, made the copy, went and made my own copies, and highlighted the portion I wanted the board to see.
Okay. So with that,
that's how I know.
With that, I hope that each director has the access to come in, read the minutes.
They do. They have.
And then the same as the public. And
absolutely.
So, Patrick, what they're saying is these minutes, just like the minutes of each meeting, are in an individual box by themselves, or
no,
are they
no,
with
no,
other
no.
papers?
No, we have boxes chronologically. The minutes go back as long as we have them. Occasionally, probably a box gets lost, or a set of minutes gets lost. I can't guarantee you there's 100% of them there, but we do have records of the minutes, and they're available to all of you at any time.
But now, are these minutes, are they just individual minutes from meeting to meeting?
Yeah.
Or are they with all the paperwork that went with the minutes?
No, they're the minutes. They're not. There's no attachment. It's just the minutes.
And I think they're maybe bound in a green.
Well, some of them are.
Green,
I don't, right.
Binder, some and it probably has the agenda, and it has the minutes in it, I think.
Jim, do you remember seeing that when we came in looking for that? Yeah, I don't.
But anyway, I just was questioning why
we spent
money.
And that gets us back to the agenda item, which was board member items for discussion, and you questioned why, and we've kind of meandered a little bit.
Yes.
So I just wanted to bring
I'm
you
sorry.
Back to the agenda.
Well, ultimately, long story short, the public now knows that we have minutes in a box, so if they ever want to do any research on the minutes, they know that we can go from year to year to year. And our new directors now know, when they get elected, that there will be a box where they can go from year to year to year to understand how the district was formed, mm-hmm. what was voted on, issues at the time. There's a lot of history here, and this will benefit the community to understand how Oceano is working in the future.
Well, and I think when you were elected, you were probably given all
for everybody, right?
Good.
Thank you. Comment on that? Hearing none, let's move to the warrants.
I move that we pay the warrants as presented.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to pay the warrants as presented. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. Comment on that item? A little belatedly, but I hear none. Public comment, is there anyone who would wish to address the board at this time? Hearing none, do we have any written communication?
No.
Okay, no written communication, which means that we are timely adjourned.